Thanks for joining the podcast with Tamara Gondor. Conversations with everyday innovators that reject status quo, think differently, and make a positive difference in their world. Listen in so you can ignite innovation, influence others, and make an impact too. And now your host, CrossFit addict, knee-high sock lover, and according to her kids, average cook, Tamara Gondor.
Tamara here, your host and lover of protein pancakes, which turns out is the perfect segue for this interview on Inside Law Street. I am so excited about this one, team. I had on Joel Clark and Cameron Smith. They are the leaders of Kodiak Cakes. They have built it from a boutique business to $100 million. You've probably seen it in Target, Costco. They were on Shark Tank. This is whole grains, high protein, healthy, delicious pancake waffle mix, and a bunch of other stuff that they've just recently launched that's also delicious. I actually eat it 4 times a week. So when they reached out to me for this interview, I was kind of excited. Here's why I think you'll be excited. This is a high value interview. They bring so many insights. We talked about how they actually look at categories that are in decline as an opportunity because that's where it needs innovation. That's where you can actually make an impact versus chasing high growth areas that we think we all want to jump into because it's the category of the month. It's a little bit of a different way to think about innovation. I think you'll get a lot out of that. We talked about how you have to manage doubt, not just from others, but also in yourself, and that's perfectly natural. We talked about how those irrational decisions, you know, the ones that don't have the data to back them up yet, are oftentimes you just seeing the patterns and the trends out there in the real world before someone's had the chance to turn them into data. And we talked about how building a culture of innovation and an innovative business is about passion and transparency. All right. Are you ready to dig in? Woo, because I know I am. Joel and Cameron, I'm so excited to have you both on Inside Law Street today.
Hey, thanks for having us. We're excited to be with you.
That's so exciting. So what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you? And I don't know, maybe it's something, I know you guys have worked together a long time, but is there something that would surprise each other?
I don't know about that. We'll see what Cameron has to say. But for me, it's kind of ironic, but I have a phobia of bears. And so, you know, the brand is Kodiak Cakes, like the biggest bear out there, but I really have no desire to see a bear out in the wilds. And when I go camping, I pretty much stay awake all night because I just can't sleep. Every little noise, I'm like, oh, there's a guy.
That's awesome. Across that
end. And I think it's the bear phobia for me.
That's more than usual too. I mean, none of us want to be attacked by a bear, but that sounds like you really are deeply concerned.
Yeah, I cannot sleep. So it's horrible. But I love camping, and you know I like seeing bears. That are contained. Then those are great.
The zoo.
Yeah.
You know it's funny because mine, I have a few. One is I also share a fear of not even just bears, but kind of animals. It's really weird. So I love to trail run, and back where I trail run, if I hear that there are either moose back there or any mountain lions, it makes me stay away from the trails for like a couple of weeks, even though I love it so much. And my wife makes fun of me because any animals, I don't know, I'm always afraid they're going to bite me or something. So I kind of have that fear. And then I grew up in Nebraska. And when we first moved to Nebraska, this is separate. When we first moved to Nebraska, my dad saw a job in the newspaper to sell pop at the University of Nebraska. And all growing up, I hated Nebraska. And then I started selling pop there for the next 6 years in high school, just every Saturday. And that became kind of a passion. And that kind of sparked in my mind the, all right, if I work, I can actually earn money. So that was kind of a little bit both there. But yeah, I'm a passionate Nebraska fan, trying to get back a couple times a year for a game.
So first of all, I love that you're both so outdoorsy yet are afraid of animals in some way or another. That's fantastic. But I have to say for the pop thing, one of my first jobs as a kid, my dad had a resort in Lake Tahoe for a little while, and I filled the Coke machines, and I got to keep the quarters, all the money in the Coke machines, because the sodas were 50 cents a pop at that point. So that was one of my first jobs as well, was selling soda on a resort.
Yeah. There's something to
I mean, well, and I agree. It showed me. I was like, oh, if I do this, I get that. That's interesting.
Yeah,
uh-huh. Interesting. So, all right, so which is a great transition. Tell listeners about Kodiak Cakes. And let me just pause and say, because I told you this offline before we were recording, I was so excited when your marketing or PR person reached out to us because we have Kodiak Cakes literally four times a week. And I'm not saying that to be nice to you guys. I'm saying that because that's what we eat because they're my favorite. The protein cakes are my favorite. So tell us about it for the listeners so they know as well as I do.
Okay, yeah. So, and that's great to hear. Glad you love our stuff. And we started out really way back when I was growing up. My mom was way into natural foods and eating healthy. And she made these pancakes for us that we loved. And they were whole grain. She had her own wheat grinder. And she grind her wheat. And everything was totally from scratch. And we didn't always love all the healthy things she made, you know, let's be honest. Growing up, it was hard to eat
like
carrots.
Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, exactly. But we loved her pancakes, and she always wanted to sell it because she thought there was a need for more whole grain, healthier options out there. And so when I was 8 years old, she made a bunch of homemade, you know, pancake mixes in these brown paper lunch sacks with all these ingredients. And then she hand wrote on the bags how to make it. And then we put them in my little red wagon. And then I went around the neighborhood and just like knocked on doors and sold pancake mixes.
Wow.
And yeah, that's really how we got started. And then it was years later when my older brother, John, took her recipe and actually created a real product and created the brand Kodiak Cakes. So that was when John did that, that was in the mid 90s. And then he ran it for a couple of years. And then I took the company over in 1997, it was just really small. We had one product. We were just selling it to like gift shops and stuff. And I was going to college and he came to me and said, "Hey, Joel, I'm going to shut this thing down. I want to go back to school and it's yours if you want it." So I took it over and just started bootstrapping it along for the next many, many years until I could finally go full time with it.
So I think the story is really interesting, and I know that you're in Costco now, so you've gone from boutiques to Costco, which is a big jump. But I want to go back a little bit in time and say, you know, why go into a category that was rapidly declining? I mean, and I don't know if that decline is just breakfast foods or kind of pancake waffle mix. So help me understand what was declining, but it was. So why stay there? Most people are jumping ship at that point.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that was now, I think, you know, we look back, we're like, wow, that was kind of crazy to go into this category that number one, wasn't a growth category. Like you said, it was declining. Buyers would even tell us even back then, yeah, you know, not that many people are making pancakes anymore. It's all about convenience, stuff like that. But we felt like there was nothing healthy in there. And we always had this belief that if we sold something healthy that tasted good, that people would start buying it and they would want to buy it. And the other thing that I think that was that we look back and we're like, wow, that was kind of crazy, was the pancake category isn't that big. It's actually kind of a small category. And so, you know, to launch a whole entire business on a category that's not growing, that's not that exciting to buyers and consumers and isn't very big, is not a really great prospect. You know?
Well, when you put it that way, it sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
But what did you experience when you first got into it? And I have to back up for listeners and say, first of all, your mom was clearly ahead of her time because now that category, natural whole foods, is just, it's huge. So to look back at, you know, what your mom was doing, it's pretty impressive to even know that she had that vision back then and that you guys were able to take it over, which must make her so proud.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so it's a declining category. You guys go into it. How do you approach it knowing that?
And I think a lot of this now, obviously we've learned a lot now since then, but at that time, our approach really was, hey, if we can make a product taste awesome that's healthy, people will start buying it again and it's easy to make. And that actually did start to happen. So we started to notice that people started to write letters after they try our product. They'd email us or write letters back in the day before email was that big. And they would say to us, "Guys, this is the best pancake mix I've ever tried. Oh, and by the way, it's really healthy. Thanks for that." You know, so they loved the product. They loved that it was healthy and they loved that it was easy. It was just that water. And so we'd get these letters and even though it was really slow growing for many, many years, like super slow growing, it was hard to hang in there for a lot of years to just keep it alive. But those letters and the feedback from the customers, that's really what kept us going. Because, you know, we get a letter, and man, I remember reading these letters and I go, oh my gosh, I've got to keep going. I have to keep going because people love it so much. So I think I just kept kind of believing that, you know, if we could get enough distribution, enough people buying it, then it would start to work because people love the product that much.
You know, so you had mentioned just now that you'd been in it for a long time. We're in 2018 now, so it has been a long time. And let me just say that, you know, when I found it, it was actually a referral. Someone, a friend of mine, told me and said, oh my God, you've got to try these. You will love them because you do macros and high protein. Then I will tell you, the benefit of only having to add water, not have to pull out eggs, milk, et cetera, was a little side benefit. I was like, oh, well, this is simple. I barely need a measuring cup. Like, this is fantastic. So, and it tastes delicious. The chocolate chip, by the way, are my kids' favorites. That's how I get them to eat them. So it's a win in my house.
Great.
Now, I know you were in it for a long time and you were on Shark Tank, and that was a big turning point for Kodiak. What changed after being on that show?
Well, Shark Tank became like this huge exposure and momentum booster for us. So we went on the show, and I don't think Cameron or I even realized the power or the impact that show would have.
Really quickly, were you going on for the exposure or were you really looking for the investment? I'm always curious what drives people to do it.
That's a great question. It was a little combination of both, to be honest. We were looking for exposure first and foremost, knowing that, you know, 7 to 8 million people watch a single episode and then they air it after. But we also had the mindset of, if we can find a good partner and the deal makes sense, this would also be awesome because these guys are pretty experienced and they know a lot about business and running big brands, and we have no clues. So it was definitely a mix of both.
Yeah.
So what happened? What was the change once that show aired, or even being on it, I suppose?
Yeah, I would say it became a inflection point for us, and a couple things happened and the timing was incredible. So we go on the show, and that's obviously this massive exposure boost, right? And they talked about Target, that you could find our products at Target. And so people went to Target and just emptied the shelves. and we were like struggling for the next 2-3 months just to keep up with the demand. And so that was really hard. But then the other thing that happened was right after we went on Shark Tank, like 2 months. So the show aired in April of 2014. In June, we actually launched Power Cakes. So that's when Power Cakes went out into Target nationwide, and that's our high protein version.
Those are the ones I love.
Yeah, and that resonated with millennials like crazy, and that immediately became the number one pancake mix at Target nationwide, blowing out Aunt Jemima by 20%. So it just went crazy. And the other thing that was just so cool about that is it was all incremental growth to the category. So we didn't like take away sales or cannibalize sales from all the other brands. We just added new customers and new growth to that category. And so that was just incredible to see.
You know, I think what you just said is so fascinating for listeners out there to pay attention to, that oftentimes I think with innovation that works like Kodiak, it's not about stealing customers and keeping the pie small, so to speak. It really is about how do we attract new people into the category, and that's ultimately where you win.
That's you're exactly right. That's what we've kind of found, that as a sweet spot almost for us, is if the category is kind of declining, that in our minds feels like an opportunity, because that means that the category hasn't really seen any real innovation. And that's exactly what we saw in frozen waffles. Frozen waffles had been intriguing to us for a while, and then if you dive a little bit deeper in that category, you see that everything has just pretty much been the same. It's been maybe different flavors, maybe different characters on boxes. But we saw that as, hey, there's no real whole grain, high protein player that still tastes great in this category. And the category is declining. And on top of that, it's also a big category. So we see that as, how can we bring people back to this category so that the category can grow incrementally instead of stealing dollars away from someone else, which ends up being really good for the category. And as you're doing that, buyers and retailers get that much more behind your brand because they see that you're filling a void in what they saw was a commoditized category that wasn't growing or going anywhere.
So I'm curious, how did you convince them to give you shelf space, given everything you just said, which I think is so valuable and important? You know, shelf space is so valuable, right? Like, they don't want to give up space unless they think you're going to turn volume. How did you convince them with a new product in a declining category to say, hey, no, put this on the shelf and you're going to see it happen?
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny, because if you would have fast forward or rewind years back, before Power Cakes and before the pancakes were very much of a success, it would have been that much harder, because we hadn't proved ourselves or proved the brand. But because what we were doing in the pancake category was so massive and so incremental to growing different retailers' pancake set, that's where they also saw an opportunity. On top of that, we hit the timing pretty well. We got, I mean, as far as growth, you hit a lot of lucky breaks. And as far as that goes, last year, Aunt Jemima started pulling out of frozen. They had a Listeria outbreak, and they decided just to discontinue items altogether. So it left a lot of retailers with frozen breakfast or frozen waffle space they needed to fill. And that's right when we were launching it. So we got pretty lucky at that time, because they needed something to fill it. We were there. So it was just a hole they could plug up, I guess.
Yeah. And another part kind of to your question is, before we launched Power Cakes and really started to see this great growth trend, before that, it was just knocking on the doors, you know, it was calling up the retailers, calling the buyers, and just, you know, pitching the product and hoping that they would listen. But at that time, that's the hardest time, because you don't have a lot of data. You don't have a great story, a growth story that you can go and tell that happened at the other retailer. You're just kind of, in fact, we didn't have any data, any real sales data, like retail data, because we didn't have the money to pay for it. And so you're just kind of going into the buyer's offices and showing them that you do have a unique position that they need on their shelf. So I think that really speaks to the need, especially, you know, in creating a brand, to really differentiate and think a ton about your positioning. And I think that some people take that for granted, or they don't put enough emphasis in that sometimes. And because we still see this. We still see so many Me Too products showing up to market that are, their whole entire strategy is to copy somebody. And that is just, that's a tough way to play. I mean, because you're not adding any new value. How are you going to bring new revenue, incremental growth to a category? That's a tough way to go.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by what both of you, Cameron and Joel, are saying around kind of this combination of uniqueness and not being incremental, and also looking for the opportunity in the decline instead of kind of running away from it, which is, I think, our tendency is to go try to find the other space. And to your point about incremental, I mean, I was in the grocery store the other day, and funny enough, I don't tend to typically go. I now order everything, but I was stuck and had to. And I actually love the grocery store. I'm one of those people that could spend hours going up and down the aisle, because I love all the products. It's fascinating to me.
It is.
But the breakfast aisle is overwhelming. Like, the number of cereals, and it's like 1% more fiber, 2% more fiber, 10% more fiber, kind of to your point about incremental, always makes me laugh, because I'm like, I don't know how you think that's going to stand out, because the cereal on the right of you now just says 20%. So like, it's ridiculous. So how do you, particularly in an aisle like that, and I guess even add to that, now that I think about it, with people now doing it more and more online, how do you stand out to the customers when there aren't a lot of options in what you do, but there's millions in breakfast when you think about our choices?
Well, we have, and just to that point, which is interesting, this is another reason why we went after kind of more declining categories, is because the bigger a category gets and the more it grows, then you're right. The tendency for a lot of people is, I want to jump into that category. I can sell beef jerky too. You know, beef jerky's been crazy.
Oh, huge. That. It's like half an aisle now.
It is. And so the points of differentiation become smaller and smaller. But, you know, obviously if the category is growing that much, then there's room. So, you know, it makes sense. You can get in there. You just won't have as unique of a position to stand on. But, I mean, I think what we've done is we looked for, well, one thing that we did is we made whole grains a big part of our strategy, and made that a big part of our identity and differentiation. And I think, there were times where we didn't know if that was enough. And we, you know, I remember even before, when we were really slow growing, early days. And I remember thinking, gosh, should we just create a white flour pancake mix and just make it really good, make it all natural at least, because maybe that's what people really want. And we decided no. In fact, we even formulated one. And I remember finally just thinking, no, we can't do that. That's completely going against what our whole entire brand is based on. And so we said no to that, and we bagged it and just stuck with our guns, stayed true to our position and our identity. And that's one of the best things that we did. So I think you have to, you can't dilute what you're trying to do. You can't dilute your position. And then eventually, like, you might come up with something else that is even a bigger innovation. So I think that's what protein did for us. It became explosive innovation for us. And so I think we've just continued to look for ways to continue to be different and to innovate so that buyers get excited and consumers really get excited about it.
Did you know that the protein was going to be explosive innovation for you, or was that a surprise?
That was a total surprise. It was funny. Joel came into the office one day and he was like, "Hey, do you ever put protein powder in your pancakes?" And I was like, "No, I don't." He's like, "We've been doing that all the time at home." And so both of us started talking about it a lot. And I think as we were talking about it, we're like, man, this actually could make a ton of sense. Around that same time, ironically enough, or a couple months later, Costco reached out to us. We were already working with them on some other items. And they said, "Hey, have you guys ever looked at a protein pancake? We kind of see an opportunity for that and want to dive into it." And that kind of perked our ears up to see, hey, there actually might be an opportunity and might be some space in this category for a protein player, a mainstream protein player. And then, you know, in everything that we've done, there have always and continues to be people who doubt and people who say, I don't think that's mainstream, guys. Right? I don't think, you know, I'm not sure that you want to go into the waffle category yet. That's a really big category. You don't want to fail. I'm not sure that a protein pancake is a mainstream item. It seems too niche. And as we've seen that, I think if you continue to go with your gut, and then I think there also has to be a little bit of, I don't know, you put blinders on that you just believe it's going to work. And I think sometimes, or a lot of times, your gut ends up being right. And that's where we got pretty fortunate that the protein actually worked out really well.
So I'm just curious about the doubters, because I do think that particularly when you're doing something innovative, and whether that's like you two who built a company, or, you know, you're inside an organization and you're trying to launch something that's more disruptive or more innovative than they're used to, how do you respond to that? Like, I hear you about the putting on your blinders and, you know, like knowing in your gut what you think is going to work, because that's really the best you can do. But we need those other people sometimes to get stuff done. So how what's the response to that situation?
I think a lot of times you just, sometimes the response is a little bit irrational, right? Because sometimes the doubters are a bit, it might be rational. They might have a real reason to doubt. And a good example of this is when we first went into the pancake, when we first started this business, we were selling a product that was like 2.5 times the normal retail price of all the other products in the category, sometimes 3 times. And that's more common today as you see more innovation coming out, more healthy products. People are becoming more used to paying a little bit more for a really great product. But in those days, that was more rare. It was really all about price, and the buyers were so concerned. But you could never sell this for over $5. That's not going to work. Everything else is $2. And so, you know, I think the response really was, look, we really believe that this is going to happen. And sometimes that's the best you have. Because you don't have any data, you know? And so sometimes really it is like Cameron said, your blinders and your passion. And that's the only thing that will get you to think irrationally sometimes. And as an entrepreneur, that is often what you're doing. You're bucking logic. You're going against what everybody else says it will work. And that's what entrepreneurs do. And so if you got to be super passionate about what you're doing, because that's the way that you will actually make irrational decisions and act on those.
Right. And don't you find that sometimes, I have found some, in my 25 years of work, that sometimes those irrational responses are the best ones. Like, you would never think that. You shouldn't say that. You should be rational and objective. But actually, the irrational sometimes get you a little bit further.
You know, it's funny, Joel and I have talked about this a lot and constantly say, yeah, we need to get some data, but let's make sure not to get too much data that it starts to cloud our judgments or cloud those intuitions or gut feelings. Because you're right. Once you're into an industry for long enough, you start to see little triggers that make you interested in a different category and in something going on Whereas if you look at the data, all of a sudden the data convinces you otherwise that it's not going to work. So it's like getting enough data, but not too much data that it clouds your judgment.
Yeah, and I think oftentimes those trends or patterns that you can really get ahead of are the ones that aren't yet put into data. So they're hard to articulate to other people because you're seeing it start, but it hasn't yet been, you know, it hasn't gone the full cycle yet to get to a point where someone's putting it on a spreadsheet.
Totally agree.
I think protein is a perfect example of that for us because when Cameron and I started talking about protein pancakes, this was back in 2012, and we actually went ahead and trademarked it. But the thing is, we had no data. Nobody else had really put protein into mainstream products yet. And so the only thing, Cameron started looking at Google search trends, and that was like the one piece of data that we kind of started watching. And it was just, we started to see that protein started to trend just in search terms like crazy. And even in like, you know, here and in other countries, and we started to watch that. And that was just the small piece of data that we had, but we started to see it continue to grow, and it helped us to start to realize that, man, this really could actually work. But it was very small. It was a small piece of data.
Well, and what a great way to say, let's not look at the typical industry data. Let's look somewhere else for data. Because I think that's sometimes the mistake we make too, is we get very myopic in what we're looking at. And we look at the same data as everybody else, and we're all looking at this, you know, keeps us in the same place. So I want to catch up to today. You've had rapid growth since being on Shark Tank. You've continued that growth because your product is really so good. And I think to both of your points, you not only hit trends, you hit the right kind of opportunity, the new customers, the brand is right. How do you make sure that you stay innovative across your business as you grow it? And I say that in a question of not just your products, because I do think one of the things that you've done really well is I kind of dug into the business of Kodiak, not just my breakfast food, was that, you know, the whole business is innovative. But as companies grow, they sometimes tend to lose that. So how do you think about innovation as you grow?
Well, I would say, because you don't want to be in a position where you're reacting. And all you're doing is you come up with a great innovation, and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, everyone else is doing it too. Because that's exactly what happens, by the way. Everybody else wants to copy and compete because people think that copying other people's strategy is a good idea, and so they do. And so, but we've always tried to be super proactive, and I think a big part of it is how you build your culture. And so we're really focusing a lot on our culture, and trying to make innovation a part of everything that we do. Not even just product development, but everything. So like the way that we, you know, processes and functions in our company, it's like, how do we innovate this? How do we innovate that? And try to be very, really collaborative, because if you have a really like a hardcore top down, you know, leadership style, and all the good ideas come from the top, then you're not going to be able to innovate very well, because innovation has to come from everyone and everywhere. It's like we talk about this. So many of our best ideas, we have no idea who actually thought of it. A lot of those great ideas just came from a random brainstorm session that we had. And it's like, whose idea was that? I don't know. I can't remember, you know? And so I think that's building it into the culture is one. And then I think being deliberate about having an innovation engine. So we've really worked on, you know, having a real process for innovation. And we have like weekly product development meetings where we talk about what we're doing, and we are building out a pipeline of new products that we're going to launch over the next several years. So trying to be really deliberate about it, but we can change, you know, we can change it. And if we have a new idea. So I think those are a few things that we do.
How do you make sure everyone is involved? I think that's one of the things that, you know, that's a lot of what we do at Launch Street with our clients, is help them get everyone feeling empowered to innovate, and then a process to innovate. How do you at Kodiak do that so that, you know, the people who are out in the field, the salespeople, have that permission or that, you know, process for bringing back ideas too? Because as I'm sure, as you know, I mean, I think oftentimes those, to your point about who knows where they come from sometimes, I think sometimes the best ideas come from the people on the field, not those of us sitting in the office.
Well, that's a great call out, and that's a good point. I think one of the biggest things we try and do is we try and get everyone here at Kodiak Cakes passionate about Kodiak Cakes and what we're doing, and also the food industry. And I think the biggest way that we can do that is by transparency. And so letting everyone know exactly what's going on with the business, exactly where where we're going financially, what's happening, new innovation, what we're trying to come up with. And so, you know, we'll collaborate, and we're encouraging teams to collaborate together. But then also we have a meeting every Monday with the whole office where we'll share business updates from every function, every department. And we encourage everyone here too, that if they have any questions or want to know anything about the business, to ask us to talk about it. If they're concerned about different products we're launching, let's talk about it, because we want to make sure that everyone's aligned and everyone's on board, so that we don't miss anything.
Oh my gosh. If I could do a cartwheel, if I wasn't wearing headphones right now, I would totally do it, because I think part of what you said that is so important for launch readers out there is that passion equals innovation. I think often the mistake that companies of all sizes make is that they've focus their effort on, we need to be more innovative, so let's invest in a ton of processes, systems, technology, you know, those type of things. But if the people aren't invested, I think you just totally nailed it with that. If the people aren't invested, then they're not going to bring those ideas and be thinking about that on a day-to-day basis anyway. And the transparency, I mean, wow, that just adds a whole nother layer, I think, of investment from your employees that other companies and leaders probably, I'm assuming, aren't getting. I mean, wouldn't you say that transparency part is huge?
Oh, massive. It really is. Yeah. People love that. It's like, that is what people want to know. You get really motivated. The more you know about something, the more involved you feel, the more empowered you feel, man, that is motivating. And so people love that. That's like, you know, and one thing we did too, is we actually did an equity, like a stock option plan, where we gave a little bit of equity to everybody in the company. And so that has really been wonderful in terms of getting everyone motivated and feeling ownership and feeling like they really are, you know, they get a piece of the upside that they're building.
Yeah, I hope the launch readers out there are really taking notes on that part, because it's one of those things that people are so afraid to do. But when you do it, not only is it liberating for you as a leader, but I also think that, to your points, it brings people into the fold, and the more ownership they have, the more innovative they'll be against the business, because they're looking for it to succeed too. It's not just a job.
Yeah, then you're able to give even more than just 8 hours. You know, you're able to give, when you own something, you just automatically care a lot more about it, and then you're able to just give more and develop, you know, and dedicate more of your thought and energy to it. So I think that's just like an X factor that really contributes to success.
We're also, you know, tomorrow quick, we're also trying to grow really fast, and you know, you kind of said this as far as innovation goes, but we don't want to get complacent at all. And it's kind of ironic, because there was a time when we were doing a few million dollars a year in sales, and if you told us that we would be approaching $100 million in sales, I mean, we would be doing cartwheels, backflips, and I'm not even that limber, and we would be going crazy, just with excitement. But it's ironic, because now as we're approaching that, our approach is totally different, in that we're like, how can we keep going fast? We don't want to get complacent. We don't want to, you know, it's like you want to be celebrating that, and you can't miss celebrating that. But at the same time, if you just focus on celebrating it, then you're missing competitors coming up, and you're missing new opportunities to continue growing the brand and seeing really how high is high. And so that's another big thing, that by keeping everyone passionate and everyone focusing on innovation, it also pulls everyone away from the pitfall of potentially becoming complacent.
Yeah, complacency is the enemy of innovation, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
It totally is.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So what's coming up for Kodiak that you're both super excited about that you can share?
I would say, well, we are, it's like multiple categories. So we're really trying to figure out, where can we take the brand Kodiak Cakes with whole grains and high protein? What other categories can we get into? And so lately the last year or so, we really started getting into the baking category heavily. And so we have a lot of cool stuff coming out in baking. So we innovated these microwavable baking mixes in a cup. So we were the first to launch those back in 2012. And that's become, like, a lot of people are doing that now. But that's actually becoming a really great category. And so we're doing all kinds of different things in there, like brownie mix in a cup. That's a lot of people's new favorite product here. We have cornbread in a cup. We're doing muffins in a cup, pancake mix in a cup. So you just add water to this little cup, microwave it, for a minute, and then you've got like a muffin ready to eat. Those are really, really cool.
So, first of all, you had me at anything in a cup. Like, yes, sold. But do you have, when you get into new categories or new kind of product lines, you know, aside from it staying true to kind of whole grain and maybe high protein, do you have criteria for going in, like the top of things of, you know, we want to see this in that category for us to be interested in at least considering it?
Yeah, a lot of the criteria that we use are things like, well, like we talked about this before, but we are at this point looking for categories that need innovation.
Yeah.
We haven't really gone after categories that are high growth categories where there's a ton of innovation already. We haven't really done that. It's not to say that we won't, but at this point we're kind of going after those quieter categories that need innovation. But we are looking for categories that need whole grain, that need healthier options. And so, you know, frozen waffle is another great example of that. That was a category that it's a big category and not a lot of innovation for a while, but not a lot of great healthy options in that category. And so we felt like we could,
it's pretty bad actually.
Yeah, it really is. And so we went into that category last year and that is just blowing up for us. People are like, you know, it's like, finally we've got something healthy that tastes really good that we can eat and on the go during the week when we don't have time to make pancakes, you know? And so that's been really cool. So we're looking for those types of categories. So I mean, at this point, it is kind of by default, it has become kind of a breakfast focus. But I don't see that will remain forever. I think it's just, where can we take whole grains, high protein, and the brand Kodiak Cakes and innovate?
Well, and for launch readers out there, I would really perk up to this kind of this concept of going into areas that need innovation, not areas of high growth. So not the beef jerkies right now anyway of the world, because to what you said earlier, that your ability to differentiate is so hard. I mean, I do remember when, and I'm probably paying more attention than, you know, your average shopper, but when it was, you know, Crave was the new one, and now it's just a sea of it. So I just kind of go by, find a flavor and put it in my cart and move on quickly because I can't keep up with the options that are out there. So I think that way of looking at it is like, where is there a gap is a way more interesting way of looking at where could we succeed versus, hey, what bandwagon can we jump on?
Yeah, I think it can be a great way to go. I mean, the downside, there's obviously a downside there because if it's really true that consumers are moving away from a certain category or a certain type of food product, then you might face some risk there. And buyers sometimes don't get very excited about new products in categories that they think are dead, which is somewhat ironic. Some, you know, some buyers will, you know, they are looking to grow their categories, but we struggled for a while getting anyone to talk to us about pancakes. It's like, I'm not really spending a lot of time on the pancake category. You know, I'm spending time on these other categories. So there are some downsides, but if you can make it work, and I think that speaks to positioning. You have to have really great positioning and innovation. You know, anywhere you go, you do, right? But if you're going into a category that is not growing, that you're not jumping on some bandwagon, then it's like you got to make sure that you're bringing something that is really different and that can actually grow the category like we talked about before. You don't want to just steal share, especially in a category like that. You have to grow the category.
I'm sure you've heard this before, but you're like the Cirque du Soleil of breakfast food. Did I say that right? Or Cirque du Soleil of Cirque? I never say the phrase right, but you know what I mean.
You know, we like that.
Yeah, I like it too. So the, because, you know, circuses were in massive decline actually when they came in. So
yeah.
I have to ask though, because you mentioned downside, which I do think is important to talk about really quickly, which because you had talked about, you know, buyers and maybe want to talk to you as much. For customers in particular, and maybe this applies to buyers or whoever your kind of key stakeholders are out there. What do you do to decrease that adoption curve? Because there is, I'm assuming, a longer adoption curve. There's a little bit more education that has to happen of why it's a good idea. So is that just a matter of, I know you talked about positioning and branding, but is it also just a matter of kind of educating them? Is it a matter of making them understand kind of that anchor that they get? How do you shorten that? Because I think for a lot of innovators out there, that's the part where their idea dies because they can't get past the little bit of longer time it takes to get people on board to what they're doing.
You're exactly right. And I think this is another reason why brands that are smaller are probably growing a lot faster than they ever have before. And that's because of social media. And that helps drive awareness and that helps in reality, it helps drive trial. Because before you had Instagram, it was just people telling friends about something and those in their inner circles. And so it was harder for something to really blow up. Whereas now you have Instagram and you can see something, a trend blow up really overnight. And then it just takes off. I mean, that's similar to what happened with Halo Top and a couple other brands where you don't hear anything about them. And then all of a sudden they're one of the biggest players in their category because of what's going on in social media.
It's interesting with Halo. So this is probably TMI, but I do macro diet, you know, proteins, fats, and carbs. Mm-hmm. And I was in this group, this program, and there's a couple thousand of us on a closed Facebook group. And one person posted about Halo, and oh my goodness, suddenly everybody across the country who was in this program had Halo. Like, it was amazing. And I think that happened in like a couple days.
Yeah, I bet.
It was incredible. So before I ask you the last question, where can people go to get Kodiak to connect?
Oh, I would say our website, kodiakcakes.com. And then our website's cool, by the way. We just relaunched it, and it's really great. And then our social media, our Instagram is awesome. So I would just tell people, follow us at Kodiak Cakes. And we do a lot of recipes, and you know, there's a lot of really great content on there. So go there.
Excellent. So I'm going to throw you for a little bit of a loop with my last question. And instead of ask for advice, although you're welcome to give it, I'm curious, actually, what's the one big aha lesson you've had in this kind of whole experience leading up to today?
Joel, I think for me is that sometimes things take time, a lot more time than you think. And I think that's exactly what the theme has been for us, especially in the early days. I mean, for me, because it just took forever to get this thing going. And I think there's a lot of reasons why. We didn't have any capital. Food trends weren't really in our favor necessarily in the beginning. And I didn't know anything about the food business. And so I think it just took time. And I remember like when my brother first gave this company to me to take over, and I was fired up. I'm like, yeah, I can do this. I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I thought, I'm going to make this thing happen, and I'm going to do it fast. And it was this reality check that hit hard, fast, that was, this is going to take a while. And you're going to be doing this a while. And there's not a lot of cash, and it's going to be tough. And so that was a big, big wake up call, is that I needed to figure out how to hang in there long enough and just be patient with it and persevere. So that was hard.
Yeah, and going along with that too, that time thing, being patient with yourself. I think one of the first things that our investor said to us, we didn't raise any money for a while, and then within the first or second board meeting, it might have been the second board meeting, he said, you know, all I really need to do is just hold a mirror in front of you guys and tell you how pretty you look. And it was just that whole confidence. It's like you have no idea if what you're doing makes sense or if you should be doing it. And so hearing that and then launching a product and seeing, you know, launching into frozen waffles at $4.99 instead of $2.49, what everyone else was at, and seeing it work is like, oh, we are onto something. We are smart enough. And it's funny because I was talking to this kid who's starting this brand and he's thinking of all the right things. He's really smart, and yet he's doubting himself. And he's, you can just tell that it's, should I be doing it this way? Should I be thinking about this? I don't know what I'm doing. And really it's like, no, you're spot on with what you're thinking. So I think that's been the biggest aha for me, is just, well, you are smart enough, and it's okay to doubt yourself. And I think that's a really good thing. I think being humble is really, really good. But I think at the same time, it's like you need to believe in yourself. You need to see that, and if other people can do this, you can probably do it too. And so I think that's been the biggest aha, is to see that, you know, Joel and I, we constantly are like, wait, us? We're leading Kodiak Cakes? I don't know about us. I don't know that we're the right people for this. But then you get great people around you, and it makes it that much easier. So anyways, I think just believing in yourself can go a long way.
Totally.
Well, this has been fantastic. And I have to say, as you were talking about in the beginning, if you're getting customer emails or messages on Instagram about how much people love your product, and we're talking about a breakfast food, then you're really doing something right, because that's not, you know, that's a product that you don't normally think of, like, I should tell them how much I love this.
Right.
Yeah, you're clearly doing something very right. So keep it up. Yeah, I said in the beginning, and it's one of my favorite foods. I mean, I do it for more than breakfast. I do it for lunch too, because it makes great PB&J sandwiches. So
yeah,
it's fantastic. So Joel and Cameron, thank you so much. This has been absolutely fantastic. It's making me hungry. So I think I'm going to go make myself some power cakes.
That's great. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Congratulations. By listening to this podcast, you took another step towards becoming an everyday innovator. To leap forward, visit www.gotolaunchstreet.com and take the Innovation Quotient Edge Assessment to discover your unique everyday innovator style and access the Everyday Innovator Digital Magazine for the top tools, insights, and inspiration at your fingertips 24/7. Tamara will be back with another Everyday Innovator conversation soon. In the meantime, if you got a nugget of value out of this podcast, let Tamara know by leaving a 5-star review and comment. Your review equals more guests, more listens, bigger impact. Until next time.